You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Welcome to New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm G.P. Gottlieb, the host of this channel. Today, I'm talking to Mira T. Lee about Everything Here is Beautiful. In this lovely, insightful novel, Miranda is the older of two sisters whose mother fled from Shanghai while pregnant. Miranda is steady, controlled, and responsible, while her little sister Lucia is wild, impulsive, and headstrong. One day, Lucia tells Miranda that she's marrying an older, divorced Russian Jew. Not long after, Miranda gets a phone call from Lucia's husband, who doesn't know what to do about Lucia, who never mentioned her mental illness. The novel moves across cities, states, countries, and is about so many things that I'm delighted to be able to sit down for a conversation with author Mira T. Lee about Everything Here is Beautiful. Hi, Mira.
Hi, Galit.
Thank you for joining me today. Will you start by telling me about yourself, where you're from, where'd you go to school, and how did you come to write this beautiful novel?
Well, I was born in Buffalo, New York, and I spent most of my childhood there, although I did live 3 years in Hong Kong during my middle school years. And I went to college out in California. I went to Stanford, but I majored in biology there. And I actually never took any literature classes or any writing classes. I really was more of a science kind of techie person for a long time. Well, I thought that I was. And then I actually went to graduate school for biology back east here in Cambridge at MIT. And then at some point, I figured out that that was really not my calling. And I ended up doing a lot of other things. I was a musician. I played the drums. I was a graphic designer for many, many years. So I didn't actually come to writing until very late in life. So I was in my mid-30s when I took my first writing workshop, when I wrote my first short story. And the reason that I decided to try writing was actually for one very, very specific reason, and that was that I had one specific story that I was burning to tell. And so it was actually about my mother. It was during this period right before she passed away. And my experience of that, I found it very interesting in the way that the story progressed and had an arc of it was sad, but it was also unexpectedly funny, you know, and it was a lot of conflicting emotions at the time. And that I thought made for a very interesting story. And so that was what drove me to write in the first place. And then, so after that, I wrote that story, it eventually got published, and I didn't think that I was ever going to write a book. It just seemed like something that was way too big, way too complicated, not something that I ever do. But then when my children were very, very young, I started thinking about these questions, basically these kind of situational dilemmas that don't have any right or wrong answers. And that was interesting to me. And so those kinds of questions actually formed the core of the book. And I actually started off also with this short story that contained some of the characters from the novel, Miranda, Lucia, Yona. And then when I decided to kind of try to write a book, I expanded off of that short story. So that's how it started.
Wow. So first of all, you are a Renaissance woman, which is so interesting. And secondly, what was the name of the story, your first story? So, because I'd like to go read it.
The very first short story that I ever published was called While We Waited. And it was kind of this story in scenes. I actually originally wrote it as a screenplay because I very much saw it in scenes. It was very visual. But then it wasn't very satisfying as a screenplay, you know, because a screenplay is not a finished product. And so I decided to write it as a short story. And and it worked out. I liked the way it turned out. It had a nice arc to it. So that was the very first one. And then the one that the book was launched from was actually called How I Came to Love You Like a Brother. And like with the book, it's Miranda's point of view. And she basically talks about how she's very skeptical of Yona and her sister marrying this man who she didn't really know anything about except for that he was very different from her, but then how she came to love him like a brother because of their bond over kind of Lucia's situation, Lucia's illness, and then Lucia actually, you know, leaving him. So kind of there's a shared grief. Yeah, so it worked. It had also a nice arc to it. But then when I decided to expand it into a novel, you know, I had a place to start from, which was really, really helpful.
Mm. And this novel is about so many things. But let's start with the four different perspectives. You introduce us to Lucia, Miranda, Manny, and Yona. Can you talk a little bit about these major characters?
Sure. Well, it's funny because, as I mentioned, I started with that story, which was Miranda's story in Miranda's voice, talking about her sister Lucia and Yona. And so she was actually very much a peripheral character. And then I had this idea that I was going to pass the story along to Manny because just chronologically, that's where it went. What happens is that Lucia marries Yona, but then she leaves him and meets Manny. And so basically I wanted to pass the story along from Miranda's perspective to Manny's perspective. So I had written the chapter with Miranda from her perspective, and kind of chronologically it ended with Lucia leaving Yona and then going on to meet Manny. And so then I wanted to pass the story on to Manny and tell it from his voice and his perspective. And I had this very kind of naive idea that I would just write this novel in four chapters. It would be Miranda and then Manny and then Lucia and then maybe Lucia's daughter or something. But I thought that it was just going to be four big chunks and then I would be done. And of course, that's actually not the way it happened at all. I do write from each of the characters' points of view, but then I also switch into a chapter where Lucia is in the hospital and it's told in the third person. And then in the second half of the book, we are in Lucia's view, but she's in third person. And basically I had to do those things because I couldn't tell the story any other way. So, you know, I think there's this, there's always this, this thing that happens when writers have an idea of how their book is going to go, but then the reality of, okay, well, I wrote that chapter and I finished it, but now I can't jump into another character's perspective because she's in the hospital. So what am I going to do? And so basically I just did whatever I could, you know, I wrote what in the only way that I thought I could to get through that chapter, to get her from point A to point B, which is to in the hospital and all this stuff happening in the hospital and out of the hospital. And so there are many points like that throughout the book where I just had to get from point A to point B. And so how was I going to do that? I was going to use third person or first person, present or past, and whatever seemed to fit that best is what I chose to do. And in the end, you know, it makes for... it's a little bit messy, but like I wouldn't have planned to do it that way, but I'm glad that it turned out that way because I do think that it fits with the themes of the story, with Lucia's mind, with this, you know, with the mental illness and how it can be very fragmenting. And so I like the way that it turned out, but it's kind of, you know, it wasn't planned that way. Let's just say.
So the two men, Manny and Yona, are both such sweethearts. They're so nurturing.
Yep.
Tell me about that.
Well, I knew that Lucia, even though she is a little bit unpredictable and she's a little impulsive, she also has a very keen sense of human beings and human nature. And so she's very perceptive. And I think that she's kind of good at detecting what's beneath the surface. So even though these two men, and they're both immigrants, but they're very different from each other. One is older, kind of more, you know, fatherly, you know, paternal, more established in his life. And the other one is very young. He's an undocumented immigrant. You know, he's trying to help his family back in Ecuador. But the thing that they have in common is they both have really good hearts, even though they're very different. And I think that definitely kind of speaks to Lucia's way of perceiving things and being able to read people. She has a very intuitive nature.
Mm-hmm. So the characters come from all over and they're always moving and traveling. Can you talk about the geography of the book? Do you have history and all these, have you been to all these places? It was really interesting.
Yes, I have been to all the places. I've been to Ecuador. I've been to Switzerland. I've not really been to China, a little bit. I have, but, I didn't mean to have half the book set in Ecuador. Again, it's one of these things where you're writing and all of a sudden I was like, wow, I think she needs to move with her family down to Ecuador. I think that's what's going to happen. And then I thought, am I really going to be able to write like huge chunks of this book in another country? And, you know, I thought, well, I can try. And so that's basically what I did. I have been to Ecuador, but what was really helpful to me was reading a lot of travel blogs and kind of travel journals from people who had lived there, expats who lived there, just travelers, backpackers, young people who had been to those places. And then also, you know, she ends up in this kind of rural kind of farm. And so for that, I actually just pictured in my mind, you know, what the landscape was and how the houses were set up, you know, where her house was and where, you know, mommy's house was and what the path was that she'd have to take to go from one place to the other. And so once I could picture it in my head, I was able to get a pretty good grip on what that was like. And that, you know, didn't have to be specific to that country. I mean, it could have been, you know, any kind of rural, farm, you know, setting, kind of countryside setting. What I like to do is kind of picture the place or even find pictures, actual, you know, images that I can work off of. And then I know what it looks like. And I have a very concrete idea of what the place is in my mind.
Because you were very descriptive of the path and what she was seeing when she was walking back and forth on the path.
Yeah.
So that was all in your mind. Okay.
Yes. Yes. And I think the thing about it is that it has to kind of get repeated because I think there's some element to the repetition of it that that kind of puts it in the reader's mind. I don't remember which writers, but I remember reading certain writers and thinking, wow, they keep repeating this one thing. But then it kind of grows in importance, but then it kind of solidifies it for the reader. And so it was important for me to kind of develop that when I was writing these settings.
So let's go back to Miranda and Lucia's mother. That she brings Miranda over from Hong Kong, and then they move into Third Uncle's basement in Tennessee. Why do they do that? Why do they call him Third Uncle? Who is he?
So they actually come from China. I think they might have flown through Hong Kong. I don't remember, but they actually come from China. And they go to Third Uncle's basement because this was a relative of her husband's, so Miranda's father. And so we don't really get a whole lot of backstory about that situation, but basically, well, I'm not going to give it all away, but basically something has happened back in China that causes the mother to bring Miranda and Lucia, who she's pregnant with at the time, over to America. It's something that she and her husband had planned, but then her husband doesn't end up coming. And so she ends up in this strange man's basement and basically having to fend for herself. And she's very much alone, but independent. And I think it just kind of speaks to her strength as this kind of single woman in a foreign country with these two girls. But she manages to work her way up, into a very comfortable life. They move out of this awful apartment, which Miranda remembers as a child, and they move to New Jersey, and they have a kind of middle class, upbringing. But that's important to the story because it kind of shows where the girls get some of that spirit, as particularly Lucia. She does have this kind of restless spirit, but in a way, her mother also had a very she was very brave, right, to be able to do that.
Right. So then much later, when their mother is already, she's ill, and she meets Yona and asks him if he has children with his first wife, because she finds out that he's divorced. And then she spits. What was that about?
I think these kinds of small actions are the things that show something about her character. And so you can kind of interpret that any way you want, but she's a woman who has strong opinions. And especially at late in age, on her deathbed, she's not going to hide them. And so I think that that's what that is about.
Okay. I thought she was a great character. So the sisters, they're just wonderful. Miranda is the older sister everybody wants. And I love how they bake together. So just off the top of my head, the cookies, the macadamia nuts, the kosher chicken, there's a lot of food, which I loved. Can you talk about the role of food? It's like food is a character in your novel.
Yeah, I think when we write about immigrants, in a new country, I don't know if it's just me, but I do feel like it's so natural to talk about food because the food is different. It's a little different from, what people eat in America. And so it's very evocative of home and of this other culture. It's a constant reminder that they're not, this isn't kind of their original home, that they came from somewhere or maybe even generations later, it still connects you to your roots. And so I think all the characters in the book are from other places. They land in America, but they're all from somewhere else. And so food is very important to them in that it's their connection to their culture, to, their homeland, where they came from. And it's very natural to kind of bond and have kind of family and just kind of coalesce around food.
A lot of yummy sounding food. So Lucia is amazed that Yona keeps everything in his head because she writes everything down.
Correct.
Can you talk about her journaling, her professional writing, her many jobs, and how it all affected her?
I think that she's... she's a pretty thorough person in kind of annotating her life. And so I think that's the reason, you know, she keeps all these notebooks of things, but she's also, you know, she's also works as a reporter for various publications and newspapers and things like that. And so, you know, reporters always carry around this notebook. And so that's just something that she's always done. I know for me, I always, you know, have this little notebook that I make jot down, you know, observations and things, and then questions that I might have. And so I think that, you know, she being a very kind of curious person, as well as again, a perceptive person, somebody who, you know, kind of carries this notebook everywhere she goes.
Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about Lucia's mental illness? I don't want to give away any secrets, but why? Well, Lucia doesn't mention her illness. She doesn't tell either of the men in her life about it. And it comes, it becomes important. So can you talk about that? I don't know if it was ever actually defined. Did you?
Her illness has been diagnosed by various doctors, and she does talk about it kind of when she's talking just as a character. She mentions that she's diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, which is an illness that's kind of in between schizophrenia and bipolar. So it has a lot of the same kinds of symptoms. And kind of thought, it's a thought disorder like schizophrenia, but then it also has this mood component like bipolar. And it's something that she feels, you know, a lot of shame about, and something she doesn't want to admit to other people, or even, you know, kind of barely to herself. And so she never mentions it to anybody she meets. She doesn't want to talk about it. She doesn't want to talk about medication. She doesn't want to talk about it at all. And partly, I think that's just kind of like a denial. But then also, some of it is possibly due to the fact that she at times doesn't believe that she has an illness, which is actually kind of, strangely enough, is a symptom of the illness, is that you don't recognize that you're ill.
But Miranda seems to be more on top of the illness than Lucia is. She knows which drugs don't work, and she tries to help from the distances, from wherever she is. And you actually name lots of drugs that have been tried and don't work, or they started to work and then they stopped working, and there's no cure. So can you talk about that? Because this book is really, it revolves around so many things, but mental illness is also a huge part of it. What can you tell us?
I thought it was really important to get this portrayal of this illness right. I don't think there are a lot of books out there, particularly novels, that really kind of get into the nitty-gritty of the actual illness, and also the way the illness affects family and people who are close, you know, to the person who has the illness. And so that was definitely part of it, was to show its complexity. And so kind of the details of the illness do matter. So the fact that there are these medications that often stop working, and the fact that these illnesses often have this component called lack of insight, which means that the person doesn't recognize that they're ill, that they don't think that they actually need to take any medicine, makes it very different from a lot of physical illnesses. So I think Miranda talks about how, you know, when her mother was ill, she had cancer, but that was much easier to deal with because they both knew she had cancer. And so they were able to work together to fight it, right? But with Lucia, Miranda says that, you know, it's impossible to help her because she doesn't want to be helped, because she doesn't know that she's sick. And so this is a very, very real problem. It's incredibly frustrating. I have personal experience with it. I also know many, many people, many, many families who struggle with these illnesses, and that's a huge component of it. And medications are also a huge component, because a lot of times the medications can keep someone stable, but because non-compliance is such a big issue, because people don't understand that they actually need to be on the meds, people go off. And so it seems almost, it seems like it shouldn't be such a big deal. But if you talk to the families who are dealing with this, the number one thing, you know, that drives them crazy, that really, really, you know, kind of dominates everything else, is medications, and, you know, how their loved ones keep going off medications and then end up in the hospital. And so I found it, I thought that it was necessary to really kind of delve into the specifics of that, because it does matter.
It really does. So this is kind of a fun side part of Lucia. She sees an animal essence in everyone. I love that.
Yeah, I think that just kind of plays to her, kind of her quirkiness, the way that she sees the world just a little bit differently than many, and that she and her sister had this bond where they were able to kind of, you know, talk about things in that kind of way. You know, how do you see this person? You know, what's their essence? And they could kind of bond over those kinds of things. Miranda, even though she is very different from her sister, still, you know, they still get each other, and they had this bond for a long time. And so that's kind of part of it, is that they both kind of read people and, you know, describe people in certain ways that, you know, maybe outsiders wouldn't quite get.
Mm-hmm. I had one more question I forgot to ask about the mental illness. Miranda was so upset with Yona for taking Lucia out of the hospital, because as you said, she did not agree that she was sick, and he didn't understand what was going on. How was he supposed to know?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't know, and he wouldn't know. And so, you know, I think in the beginning of this interview, we were talking about, you know, how did I start writing this book? And so one of the things I said was I liked exploring these characters and these dilemmas, because people are all acting in ways that they think are the best. You know, they're coming from good places. And so Yona thinks that he's doing the right thing. Miranda thinks that she's doing the right thing. You know, Lucia thinks that she's doing the right thing. And, you know, in their own ways, they're all just trying to, you know, live their lives, live good lives, but they come into conflict with each other constantly. And so, you know, Miranda has this idea that Lucia needs to be in the hospital, and Yona's saying, but look, you know, it's not good for her. And so, you know, the reader can side with whoever they want to side with. I deliberately, you know, created many scenarios where it's not always clear, you know, who is in the right and who's in the wrong. And it depends on your point of view, your own experiences. I think that, you know, the kind of conflicts between the characters are what makes the novel rich.
Oh, there's so much richness. So then Lucia decides she wants a baby. And for lots of reasons, it's not going to work. So Yona buys her a puppy.
Yes. Right. Right. I feel like I've heard that somewhere before, but yeah.
It's an age old story. And then she runs away.
Right.
And picks up Manny, who then picks up the story.
Correct. Yep.
And then she moves into the house with the 11 Ecuadorians. So that's when Ecuador comes into the story. Can you tell us about that house and what was its genesis, and then what happens to the house and the raids on the house?
Well, I did spend some time in these towns north of New York City for a while, and there are a lot of immigrants who live there. Sometimes they're undocumented immigrants. And so, you know, I saw a little bit of that world. And so, you know, when Lucia meets Manny, you know, she kind of moves into this house that's full of immigrants, and she feels comfortable because she's actually traveled and lived abroad, and she's fluent in Spanish, and she's comfortable with kind of you know, that situation, people of that background. It's she feels natural, I think, and comfortable in it, and so you know, that's where she wants to be. But then for Miranda, it feels very strange and kind of very foreign and bizarre. And so she kind of has a different take on it. Like, but you know, that's kind of where the story shifts kind of from Miranda to Lucia going and continuing to do her own thing. And then, you know, then having the baby with Manny and eventually, you know, moving with him back down to South America.
But right after the baby's born, that Lucia's illness is interpreted as postpartum depression. I had never thought of it, but that must be a common situation.
Well, it's actually pretty common for things to get triggered postpartum. So, you know, after giving birth, the hormones are kind of all over the place. And so postpartum depression, as we know, is pretty common. And then there's also something called postpartum psychosis that happens in a, you know, kind of far smaller percentage of women, but it actually also does happen. And you do have these kind of psychotic thoughts and psychotic behaviors that occur. But then for somebody like Lucia, who has had episodes before, it's not at all uncommon for those to be triggered after giving birth because of the fluctuation of hormones. It's a very vulnerable time for people who have these illnesses. You know, often people, even people who are kind of under care and supervision, will stop taking the meds because they're pregnant, but then after birth it gets very tricky.
Right. So now Manny, who's this young guy, undocumented, struggling, and now he's raising the baby. And then we get into Lucia's head, and she brings up the two serpents that threaten her. How did you come up with this particular manifestation of her illness?
I can't exactly remember where the pair of serpents came from, but certainly having voices in your head, having multiple voices, sometimes voices that can be kind, sometimes very harsh, are very common in these illnesses. And so I did a lot of reading about a lot of kind of firsthand accounts that you can find online, people who just kind of not like, you know, published things, but just people who write in blogs or journals about what was happening to them when they were going through a psychotic break. And so there are kind of many accounts, and I don't feel like Lucia's is not that unusual. If you kind of hear enough of these stories, hers is actually sounds very much like many others in the kinds of thoughts she was having, the kind of paranoia she was feeling, just, you know, the delusions she was having. They're not uncommon at all for these kinds of illnesses.
So then art is another thing that is woven through the story. Like she talks about how the first time it happens to her, she sees a piece of art come to life, and she gives it a name. She gives her illness a name. I think she called it the zing or something like that.
Oh yeah, right.
And then she wishes that she could stay that way forever. And then the other way art came in is there's this picture that she's dragging around from place to place. It's like a duck and a goose or something like that. Do you remember?
Oh, that, yeah, that's actually the painting that she and Yona paint when they're right after they first met, and they're very happy and everything seems perfect. So they go to this cottage for vacation along with Miranda and some friends, and you know, they end up painting just for fun. And so there's this painting of who, you know, these representations of her and Yona. And she I guess she ends up kind of, you know, carrying that around with her. But then, you know, kind of the painting coming to life when she's having her, it's not really like a full psychotic break, but it's more like these prodromal symptoms that occur where things are a little bit off, but you kind of still know that they're a little bit off. And so that's kind of what she's talking about when she's talking about this particular painting that she sees in the museum. It's actually a Picasso painting called Girl Before a Mirror. And she talks about how she stares at it and it kind of comes to life. And that, again, is also pretty common, you know, in prodromal phases. So if you read any, you know, literature about what prodromal kind of symptoms are, you know, these kinds of kind of things like, oh, you know, I kind of heard voices, or I thought there were signals, certain things were signaling to me, but I wasn't sure. And maybe I just made it up because I wanted to, you know, it's very common to have these kinds of symptoms also.
So I, as we've been talking, this book is about just so many things, and you do a beautiful job of tying them all together. When you're asked to describe what the book is about, what do you say? What do you focus on?
It is about a lot of different things. I think that it's, on one hand, it's really about the ripple effects of mental illness and how it touches so many people around whoever it is that has the illness. But on the other hand, it's also very much a story of relationships and, you know, kind of the conflicting relationships that we can have with our loved ones. So where we love them, but we want to help them, but we don't know how. And it's very much, you know, geared around these kinds of questions where we're trying to figure out the best ways to love, you know, the people in our lives. So I think each of the characters is trying to do that. They're trying to love the people in their lives. And yet, you know, and yet the way they think is best, you know, puts them in conflict with that person or with other people who love them. And that, I think, is the core of the story.
So Mira, I have taken up enough of your time, and I'd like to ask you the traditional New Books question. What are you working on now?
Well, I have started on a couple different things. I am hoping that one of these things turns into my next novel. It's a lot different from this book. It has a more fantastical premise. I'll say that. I'm not going to get into it because I really don't know if it's going to work out, but it is a novel that involves a premise that is not quite in reality. I'll say that, which makes it quite different from this, you know, this book. But so I'm writing, you know, a couple of short stories to see where those go, and we'll see.
We'll look forward to seeing. Mira, it was lovely chatting with you about your novel, and I look forward to reading more from you in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Galit. This was a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to this podcast from the New Books Network. Once again, I'm G.P. Gottlieb, host of New Books in Literature, and today I've been talking with Mira T. Lee about her novel, Everything Here is Beautiful. Join the New Books Network and learn both about my upcoming podcasts and those of many other hosts in a variety of categories. Goodbye until my next conversation for the New Books Network.